This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
All right, good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon.
All right. Calm off, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. Can you please state and spell your first and last name?
Yes, my name is Jhilim Biswas. My first name is spelled J-H-I-L-A-M. Last name spelled B-I-S-W-A-S.
And your date of birth?
Date of birth is 9/12/1982.
What do you do for a living?
I am a forensic psychiatrist, and I work on at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
And what is a forensic psychologist or psychiatrist? Pardon?
Well, I'm a forensic psychiatrist by specialty training, and we work in the courts often doing forensic evaluations of individuals, but I'm also an adult psychiatrist, and I work at Brigham and Women's Hospital as an adult psychiatrist on the consult liaison unit.
And can you just briefly describe your education and training background that qualifies you for this work?
Sure. I grew up in the South Shore. I went to Dartmouth College, and then I went to medical school at UMass Chan Medical School. I then did my psychiatry residency at Harvard Longwood, which consists of Brigham and Women's, Beth Israel, Boston Children's at the time. And after that, I did subspecialty training after my psychiatry residency in forensic psychiatry, again at UMass Chan Medical School.
And focusing in on January of 2023, were you working at the Brigham and Women's Hospital?
I was.
And specifically on January 25th, 2023, did you interact with a woman, a patient there named Lindsay Clancy?
I did on January 26th.
26th, okay. And in what capacity did you interact with her, as a forensic psychiatrist or as a member of the staff at Brigham and Women's?
I interacted with her as a member of the staff, the psychiatry staff at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
And did you have a particular role that day on January 26th, 2023?
Yes, I was on the consult liaison service, which is the psychiatry service that's called by medical and surgical specialties to help evaluate and provide psychiatric recommendations.
And did you meet with Ms. Clancy on that day, on the 26th?
I did.
And was that around 2:14 p.m. that you had that interaction?
I think it was somewhere between 2 and 3 o'clock, yes.
And when you met with Lindsay Clancy, was that in her hospital room in the ICU?
It was.
And was she intubated at the time?
She was.
And was she awake?
She was awake.
And was she oriented?
So she was intubated, so it was difficult for her to really answer a range of questions. And so she gestured to me to be able to write. And so we knew that she was really exhausted and anxious from the entire experience and the evaluation. And so we didn't ask her all of the questions around orientation.
When she gestured that she wanted to write, did you give her something to write with or something to write on?
I did.
And what did you give her?
Paper.
And did you also give her a pen or something like that?
I did.
Okay. And was she able to, when you asked her certain questions, was she able to answer those questions by writing the answers on the paper?
She was.
Okay. And did you ask her about her mood that day?
I did ask her mood.
And what did she write?
She wrote horrified.
And what was her affect during this interaction?
At the time that I saw her, she was intubated, and that in and of itself is very uncomfortable. And so she seemed very anxious.
And did she write anything else on that paper that you saw?
Yes, the entire evaluation was done through writing because she couldn't speak.
So what types of questions were you asking her, and what was she responding with?
So we asked her, you know, how are you feeling? Horrified. And then she wrote down, do I have an attorney? And I said with my team that at this time, we're just getting to know you and getting to know the case, and we're not sure exactly, you know, what is happening. and we asked her, do you have questions for us? And she asked, is my body broken? Are my legs straight? And she then asked about, can she have visitors? And, you know, where her family is.
And when you are, you know, asking her questions, what is the goal of the questions that you're asking her? What are you trying to address or assess?
It depends. Psychiatrists are called for all kinds of issues that happen in the hospital. In this situation, we were asked around, you know, diagnostic clarity, that there was a likely suicide event that occurred. Can you evaluate her for safety at this time before she goes into surgery?
And I know that she was intubated, so she's writing her answers. But based on the answers she wrote on the paper, did she seem to understand the questions you were asking?
Yes.
And her responses, did you understand those?
Yes, she was anxious and she needed breaks. And I said, anytime you need a break, we can leave. But she did write to us those particular answers.
So what she was writing, even when she asked if she had a lawyer, those were things, what she was writing made sense given the situation. She wasn't writing, is there a unicorn in the corner, right?
Correct.
Like that. What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What?
If there was a unicorn in the corner. So what she's asking, do I have an attorney? Are my legs straight? Is my body broken? Those all made sense given the situation she was in, correct?
They were relevant answers and questions she was asking.
Okay. And are you familiar with the characteristics of psychosis?
Yes.
Okay. And what are the typical signs or symptoms of someone who is in psychosis?
It really depends, and it ranges across a spectrum of symptoms. So we have a whole category of different types of symptoms that we look at for psychosis, and they are different for everyone. But, you know, they can be what we call negative symptoms, which are more internal, isolating, not responding, not reacting very much. And then we have symptoms like positive symptoms. That's what we call them in psychiatry. But they're a little bit more outward focused, where objectively you can see what those symptoms are, like being paranoid, darting your eyes around, responding to internal stimuli, which means you're responding to voices, and, you know, being within a delusion. So there's all kinds of symptoms, and they look different for each and every person.
In your conversation with Ms. Clancy, did you notice any internal or external signs of psychosis?
At the time, I documented that I did not note those.
Okay. And did you also note that, you know, she was, her thinking was linear, goal-oriented, thoughtful, and she didn't appear to be responding to internal stimuli?
Yes, that is typical language in psychiatric mental statuses, and I did document that.
What is internal stimuli?
Oftentimes, it's very difficult for our patients to be able to articulate what they're hearing. They may have perceptual disturbances like hallucinations or auditory hallucinations, and maybe hearing voices. When it's really active, we often see those individuals interacting with those voices. I didn't see that in that particular moment.
So, for example, you could see someone engaging in looks like they're engaging in a conversation with someone, or looks like they're looking over at something, thinking something or someone is there when they're not.
Is that correct? That's what responding to internal stimuli is.
Okay. Yes. And you didn't see any of that present with Ms. Clancy?
Correct.
Okay. And would it be fair that some of the obvious signs of psychosis would be someone whose thoughts are disorganized, that their thinking isn't linear, that they're not making sense, things like word salad, where they're just throwing in words, making sentences that don't make sense?
So you describe symptoms that we can see in people with serious mental illness who have a psychotic disorder with active symptoms.
And you didn't see any of that with Ms. Clancy, is that correct?
Not in that snapshot moment of time.
Right. And to be clear, you only saw her for a limited amount of time on that one day, correct?
That is correct.
And this is January 26, 2023, about a day and a half or so after she's admitted to Brigham and Women's.
That is correct, yes.
And she's still intubated.
Yes.
And one of the first questions she asks is, do I have a lawyer?
Yes.
And did you have any, based on your training experience, did you have any thoughts about her awareness or thoughtfulness about the questions she asked or the answers she gave?
I don't know what that means, objection.
Okay, if you could rephrase that.
Did you have any assessment professionally of the responses and awareness that she had?
Yes, at that time, I was trying to assess, you know, is she confused or oriented? Is she completely disorganized? Is she so anxious that she won't be able to sleep? I was assessing suicidality mostly. I was being called into the room for that. And so there were a lot of things that I was assessing all at the same time before the surgical intervention that was going to happen. And did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. And so in doing that, in evaluating all of those things, did you have any concerns at that point in time that she couldn't make a decision to have the surgery or that there was some cause for concern there in her behavior?
I felt she had the capability to make the decision for surgery at that time.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Reddington.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So just a couple of questions. When counsel was asking you about psychosis, apparently you've dealt with people, some of your patients, while you're working in the hospital that, in fact, were florid. They had psychosis and symptoms of psychosis?
Yes.
So you've dealt with people, is it a fair amount of people that would actually hear voices?
Yes, I've seen many patients that are hearing voices.
And were they, to your knowledge, were they involved with command hallucinations, things of that nature?
My patients in the past?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. A large amount of people that you've treated over the years that have suffered from command hallucinations, hearing voices, delusions, things of that nature, right?
In my career, yes.
Yeah. And do you know whether or not there had been any indication from Lindsay as to, well, in the hospital, having any delusions or psychosis symptoms of that nature, if you know?
So I saw her, she had only been in the hospital for a day and a half.
Right.
And I hadn't heard about any psychotic delusions from anybody.
And that's what you saw, though. I mean, as far as you, like, how often would you see her?
I see. I saw her one time.
Once. Okay. How long were you evaluating her?
Probably because she was intubated, it was
just asking how long?
About 20 to 30 minutes.
20 minutes, 30 minutes. And a psychosis, is a psychosis, to your knowledge, something that has to continue or does it stop?
It absolutely depends on the patient. It depends on their age, how many episodes of psychosis they have had. It depends on the type of psychosis we're seeing. For some people, they can have moments of clarity, absolutely. And for some, it can be more continuous. It really depends on the patient and their illness.
Okay. So basically, you're saying that it would be case specific?
Yes.
All right. And in the 20 minutes or so that you had, when you're dealing with Lindsay, Were you aware of her prior medical and psychiatric history?
When we get consulted on a case, we...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm asking, were you aware of her medical and psychiatric history?
I was aware of the portion that was in the medical record before I saw her.
Okay, so that would deal with as far as postpartum psychosis?
Could you ask that question again?
When you looked at the medical record and when you were involved evaluating her on behalf of the hospital, because you weren't a psychiatrist that her mother or father had retained and asked to go see her, right?
Correct.
You were working for the hospital.
I was working for Brigham and Women's Hospital.
And you had spoken to a number of people before you interacted with her for the 20 minutes that you saw her while she was there for a month, right?
No.
Okay. Now, were you aware of her history of documented postpartum depression?
I was aware of mostly the postpartum anxiety that was in the record, yes.
And postpartum anxiety, the symptomology would be insomnia?
Yes,
and candy. Did she have insomnia prior to seeing you for 20 minutes?
Yes.
And do you recall the length of time that she would be suffering from insomnia? Was it like a week, a day, a month, or what?
I don't recall the timing exactly.
Do you recall that at one point that she was on medication and actually went for 48 hours without sleep?
I don't recall that exactly from the record, that number.
Do you recall, in addition to the insomnia, that she was concerned as asking you if, in fact, her brain was broken?
She asked me, is my body broken?
Okay. Did you see in the records that she was concerned about the effect of the drugs and whether or not her brain was broken, quote unquote?
I did not see that language in the records.
How about acting on command hallucinations, conversations or statements to the effect that she was having thoughts of suicidal ideation? You knew that, right?
I did know about the suicidal ideation, yes.
How many times did she express to people that she would tell people that she had been concentrating on committing suicide? If you know.
I don't recall the number of times.
So, in any event, you know that she was insomnia, you know that there was a significant period of time that she was suffering from insomnia, you knew that she was expressing suicidal ideation. How about homicidal ideation? Did she express that?
Not from my review of the records.
Okay. Would that be indicative of a person that could be in psychosis expressing concerns about homicidal ideation?
Objection.
No. Overrule. Allow it.
Sorry, I don't know that question. Could you repeat that question?
Sure. Is that one of the factors that one would be concerned about as a psychiatrist if a person was expressing homicidal ideation?
I would be concerned about that as a psychiatrist.
And in fact, in this case, you knew at least about the suicidal ideation that she had been expressing, right?
Yes.
But you didn't know about any homicidal ideation she was expressing, right?
From the records or
prior to coming to see you for 20 minutes?
I knew that there was an event that had occurred and that...
Three children died. That's the event you're referring to, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Next question.
Now, as far as the period of time that she was involved with... By the way, what's hypomania?
Hypomania is sort of the gradual increase towards mania, the symptoms that we see in somebody who might have bipolar disorder. And with bipolar disorder, we see mixed depression and we see mania and we see symptoms that kind of gradually increase to mania. And we call that period hypomania.
Did she exhibit, to your knowledge from the medical records, any periods of hypomania? Excessive cleaning, exercise, or activities, being awake at night, things of that nature.
At that moment, on January 26th, I don't remember reading about that.
Okay. Do you have any memory of reading about it at all? Other than that moment? As a treating physician, a doctor, a psychiatrist?
I don't remember.
So what is your purpose at the hospital? I mean, you're not treating the person for any illness that they have as far as their mental condition, right? You're not treating them.
We are.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
So you're concerned about, obviously, their symptomology, if any, that they present at the time that you're looking at them and talking to them, or in this case, she couldn't talk, but...
She couldn't talk, and she was going into surgery, and we had recommended suicidal precautions. We had recommended trauma-informed care so that she was getting the care that she needed. She was going to go into surgery, and then after that, we were going to continue to follow her and assess her and make sure that we were evaluating her appropriately and making recommendations to the surgical team for the care that she needed.
All set?
Objection.
Yeah. Next.
So... when you're dealing with this person that's going into surgery, did you know what type of surgery she was going in for?
At the time, we knew that she was going into surgery for her spine.
Did you know what happened to her spine?
I knew that she had injuries to her spine.
Did you know that there was a transection injury, that her spine was basically exploded in T5, T6? Other thoracic vertebrae fractured, including the cervical vertebrae up by her throat. You knew all that?
We were reading about it. It was all actively happening at that time.
Was she in pain?
Yes, I'm sure she was.
Was she on medication?
She was on a few medications related to pain and blood pressure.
So she's brought into the hospital. You knew from reviewing her records as a psychiatrist that, in fact, she coded the day before, right?
I don't recall her coding the day before I saw her. I do recall from the records that she had a coding event after, on the 27th or 28th.
Okay, so... you were not involved with her when she coded. Did you know that she had any events of that nature right after she was brought from the South Shore Hospital?
I don't know what you're referring to.
You know what a code is, right?
Yes.
Did she almost die before you saw her?
I think it was after.
Okay. How about perfusion, blood in the body and tubes being inserted into her chest? Did you know that from looking at the records?
I think that happened after, but I don't recall because I don't have the records on me.
Okay. So did you know that she had massive transfusions?
Not at the...
on this jury that it was after... she saw you, that she coded, had transfusions, had double tubes put into her both sides of her lungs. It's your testimony that it was after she saw you? You don't know, do you?
My understanding is the surgery happened after I saw her.
Oh, the surgery did. I'm asking you about the massive transfusions. I'm asking you about the tubes being inserted so that the 300 milligrams or whatever it is of blood can be perfused or taken out of her chest can. I'm asking about whether or not you knew that she had coded. I'm not asking about the surgery. Obviously, that took place after you saw her, right?
Objection asked and answered.
No, overruled.
Because that's why you were talking to her, right? To see if she could make an informed consent to a surgery, I guess.
No, I was called for the suicidal ideation.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said that you wanted to talk to her about the surgery as well.
No.
The suicidal ideation continues to this day, does it not?
Objection.
Sustained.
Did the suicidal ideation that you were concerned about continue the time that she was in Brigham and Women's Hospital for a month?
I saw her one time.
Right, I know that. 20 minutes, right?
Yes.
So you know nothing about suicidal ideation after you saw her intubated and then laying in the bed, and then you talked to her as you've discussed with the jury, right?
That's correct.
That's it?
That's correct.
How about the cops? How many cops were there?
I don't recall.
There were some, right? There were armed men in that room, were there not?
I don't recall. I think they were outside the room, if I remember correctly, from 3 years ago.
Okay. I know it's been a while. Do you recall armed police officers being outside the room?
I don't recall.
Do you have any memory of any police officers being outside the room where she was laying in that bed?
I knew she was in custody, and generally in custody...
No, not generally. Let's talk about Lindsay Clancy.
I can't recall.
Okay. Did you know that she couldn't even have visitors in the sense that the police would not even let her mother or father visit with her?
I can't recall.
Did you know that when you were dealing with her, was she handcuffed to the side of the gurney or the stretcher?
She had a soft restraint, according to my documentation.
Soft restraints, okay.
Yes.
Did you have any conversation with the police at all?
No.
And after you spoke to her for 20 minutes, that really ended your involvement with Lindsay Clancy until today, right?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Redirect.
Doctor, when you were being asked about these records that you reviewed, what records did you review?
I reviewed the records in EPIC, which is our medical record at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
And so you didn't do a deep dive into Ms. Clancy's entire psychiatric history prior to coming to Brigham and Women's, correct?
I did, as you do, as is protocol for a consult, you look at the records and you make sure you have an understanding of what's been happening with the patient.
But did you have access at that time to all the records for all the treatment providers Ms. Clancy had seen regarding her mental health for the last 6 months?
You know, I don't even know. I had some of the records. I don't know if I had all of the records.
Okay. And so you reviewed what you had, correct?
Correct.
And then you met with the patient, correct?
Correct.
And in meeting with her, where she's, she's had these events happen. She's had, the tubes in her chest. She's about to go into surgery. One of the first things on her mind is, do I have a lawyer? Correct?
That move to strike that. First of all, it wasn't part of cross. Secondly, this is the fourth time the counsel has tried to accentuate that.
Well, I'll allow that question. Go ahead.
Well, that was one of her first thoughts was, do I have a lawyer, correct?
She was exhausted. She was intubated. She could barely talk. She was writing and she was getting ready for surgery. And so those were the few questions that came up.
Right. She's exhausted. She's anxious. She's in pain. She's about to go in for surgery. And she wants to know, do I have a lawyer?
Sustained.
So given the condition she was in at that time, the defense counsel asked you about the pain she was in. Defense counsel asked you about the surgery she
yes.
was about to go into. Those are the issues that she was focused on.
Yes.
And your conversation with her, am I broken? Are my legs straight?
Yes.
Do I have a lawyer?
Yes.
Thank you.
She wasn't focused on much while she was exhausted, in pain, anxious, and concerned about the future surgery that she was imminent, was she?
If you could speak up, ask that question.
Sorry. She wasn't focused on much of anything while she was exhausted, in pain, unable to talk, and anticipating imminent surgery, right?
That's correct.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Anything, Colin?
No.
All right, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, Attorney Buckingham, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please tell the jurors your first and last name?
Robert Flynn, FLYNN.
And how are you employed, sir?
From Duxbury Police Department.
What is your current rank or assignment there?
Currently, I am a patrol sergeant.
How long have you been with the Duxbury Police?
About 7.5 years.
Going back to January of 2023, what was your assignment then?
I was assigned to the Detective Bureau.
So if I draw your attention to January 24th of 2023, were you working that day or were you called in?
Both. I worked the 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. shift, and I was called in later after my shift.
Okay. So you became aware of an incident that occurred in the town of Duxbury approximately 6 p.m. that evening?
Yes, ma'am.
And so when you come back in after working that day shift, where do you go or where are you directed to go?
I was contacted by Sergeant Detective Jamali, who informed me to respond to 47 Summer Street.
And so while you're en route to that location, are you monitoring the radio?
Yes, ma'am.
And are you monitoring communications with other Duxbury officers?
Yes, ma'am. I had a department-issued vehicle that I took home, and I responded to it in in that vehicle, and I had scan on, which is getting all surrounding agencies, including fire, Pembroke, Kingston, Marshfield.
And while you were en route and had that radio on, could you hear officers screaming and it being chaotic?
Yes, ma'am.
When you arrived at 47 Summer Street, were there already other first responders there?
Yes, ma'am.
And is it fair to say that when you actually arrived at that location, you were made aware that the children that were on scene had already been transported?
No.
Okay, so what did you know when you arrived? What did you
know? I knew that there was an incident involving children. I learned that when I initially responded and spoke to Sergeant Homestead. He was the one that informed me that that it appeared that a mother had killed her three kids.
Okay, well, when you got there on the scene, were the children still in the house?
So I was under the impression that they were still in the house because most incidents I've had involving a sudden death at a house, the fire department declares them on scene and it becomes a police matter and we help with the investigation.
Okay, that was your understanding based on the information that you had, correct? But did you come to learn that the children had been transported?
Yes, ma'am.
And how about the individual, the person, the fourth person, if you will, on scene? Were you advised that there was a woman who had been transported from the scene as well?
Yes, ma'am.
And as a result of kind of the nature of what you believed you were coming into, did you call for extra help?
With that our own department or?
With an outside department.
Yes. Yeah. So the Massachusetts State Police has jurisdiction over any death investigation in the town of Duxbury and other communities. So we are to notify investigators of the state police.
And as a detective with the Duxbury Police, you're familiar with that relationship with the state police that oftentimes when a death investigation occurs that you work in connection with the state police detectives unit of that jurisdiction to conduct an investigation, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And so in this instance, when you went there, you believed that the children had already passed, so you made that phone call to the detectives unit, correct?
That's correct.
And certainly, sometime thereafter, you were advised of the children's passing and that this was a death investigation, correct?
That's correct.
Once the children had been removed from the scene and the defendant had been removed to the scene, did you and your other officers from the Duxbury Police Department do anything to secure the scene?
Yeah, so I was, once we gathered more information and I notified the Massachusetts State Police, we decided to conduct a security sweep of the house. This is to make sure that there was no further suspects or further victims or any other people in the house that we may have missed.
In regards to this security sweep, what is the goal? You just described it to kind of identify if there are other people, but as far as your observations and your contact within the house, you try to minimize your contact within the house in those instances?
Yes, I'm not searching for any type of evidence. I just have different observations that I obviously notice.
And what areas of the house did you go into prior to the arrival of the state police?
I entered with three of us, Sergeant Patricus, who's from the Kingston Police Department, and it was Lieutenant Weiler at the time. So we all kind of went into our own separate rooms and separate ways throughout the house. But I think ultimately all three of us went to all three floors of the home.
Okay, and so talking first about the main floor of the house, did you go into the kitchen area?
Yes, I did.
And did you make any observations in that kitchen area?
I observed, it was clear to me that there was young children living there. There was some paintings on the wall. I noticed a takeout food bag. The only word I remember from that is it being Mediterranean written on the receipt.
Okay. And if I may approach with a picture. Showing you. The picture is just accurately depict the kitchen area that you observed.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll move to a minute.
That may be a minute.
Just kind of showing you on the screen what's now been marked as Exhibit 44. This is the kitchen at 47 Summer Street, and in the middle of the photograph is a takeout bag, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And you're aware that in the background here of the photograph where there's a kitchen table, there's kind of a door next to it.
Yes, ma'am.
And then there's, on the other opposite side, there's a slider door, correct?
Correct.
And in addition to making those general observations about the kitchen area, did you go in other areas of the main floor of the house?
Yes, I did.
And in the living room area, I'll show you what's been marked already as Exhibit 25. Is that familiar to you as well?
Yes, ma'am.
And again, upon your kind of sweep of this house, what stood out to you about the living room area?
There appeared a young child lived there, and there was food on the couch, like a snack.
And in this photograph, can you see a couple bowls, a bowl here on the bottom of the photo and a bowl further up on the couch?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, in that main area of the house, you didn't find any other individuals, correct?
Negative.
And had you been made aware that the husband, Patrick Clancy, had been on scene and he had also been transported from the area?
Patrick Clancy was on scene when I was there.
Okay. At some point, did he go in an ambulance?
Yes.
Now, in that second floor of the house, let me ask you, what's the next area of the house that you recall going through in this suite?
Into the basement.
Now, were you advised that
I'm not really.
Okay. And fair to say, this was still, upon your arrival, a pretty chaotic scene.
Correct.
There was a lot of firefighters around, a lot of equipment going around.
Correct.
Okay. In that basement, did you do a full sweep of every room in the basement?
Like I said, three of us combined made sure that we at least hit every part that a human or someone could be in. So, yes.
Okay, but as far as you yourself, fair to say you just kind of went in on the left side?
Yes, I went into the left.
And did you see a lot of the firefighters' equipment still left behind?
Yes.
A lot of medical supplies?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, going up to now the second floor, did you go to the second floor of the home?
The top floor?
Yes.
Yes.
And did you enter into the master bedroom?
Yes.
And is there anything that kind of struck you about walking into that master bedroom as far as the temperature of the room?
It was colder than the rest of the house.
And did you notice that there was, in fact, a window open?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I'm just going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 43. Is that familiar to you as the window that you observed open?
Yes, ma'am.
And as far as the furniture in that bedroom, did you make any observations of a bed in the room?
Yes, ma'am.
Was there anything that stood out to you on the bedding or in the area of the bed?
The bedding itself.
If it stood out to you?
Not necessarily, no.
How about the items on the bed?
Yeah, so Sergeant Patricus pointed out that there was a cell phone on the bed.
Okay, I'm just going to show you. It's already been marked as Exhibit 42. And C is an object. Is that how it appeared when you first entered into the bedroom?
Yes, ma'am.
The phone. At some point, were you able to go out to the backyard of the home?
Yes, ma'am. So after leaving the upstairs, we went back through the kitchen, and that's what we talked about earlier, and went out through the back slider.
And were you able to make observations of the backyard area?
Yes, we came out to a porch and took a left, which would have been the back right side of the house. And there was some matted down snow and some other medical equipment, which we believed was the window that Lindsay Clancy came out of.
And from that area or that vantage point in the backyard where you were, could you see into other areas of the house?
Yes.
And what areas of the house could you see into?
Near where that area was, there was a basement window that kind of went into, a basement window to like an office or gym area.
Show you Exhibit 38. Is that familiar? It's the backyard view.
Yes, ma'am.
And fair to say there's an area here of the photo that I'm pointing to with my pen, which is kind of on my right. That is a window well. Is that the window you could see into?
Correct.
And then again, in this photograph, do you see the open window that you observed when you went into the bedroom?
Yes, ma'am.
As far as that open window, when you were in the backyard, did you see any screens or anything around the property that would give you any indication of how that window was open or the condition of the window?
No, to me it appeared that the screen was just pushed up.
Now, again, as you and the three other investigators did that sweep of the house, you didn't touch or move anything, correct?
Negative.
And once you did that security sweep, is there a protocol in place to make sure that the scene remains as it is until the state police arrive?
Yeah, so there was one of the officers was logging individuals that were in and out of the house. Crime scene tape was put up around the property. The doors were secured, and around this time is when I received a phone call from Trooper McKellican.
Okay. And did you remain on scene?
We remained on scene until some troopers showed up to the area.
Okay. And while you were on scene, did you attempt to help coordinate other members of the Duxbury Police Department to take care of other things like going to the hospitals and securing coverage?
The decision for who was going to the hospital was made by our command staff, but I met some of the troopers at back at the station to coordinate further.
Okay, and when you were back at the station, were you aware or advised that a search warrant was sought for the residence?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you go back to 47 Summer Street with the team when the search warrant was received?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you participate in the execution of that warrant?
I was present during it.
Okay. Fair to say, though, you didn't, you weren't responsible for searching any particular location or collecting any evidence?
No, ma'am.
That was reserved for the state police?
For the most part, yes.
At the conclusion of that search warrant, were you asked to go back into the house?
Yes, ma'am.
And what were you asked to go back in the house to do?
Once the search warrant was completed, my lieutenant told me to go back up into the house and close the window. In the upstairs bedroom.
And when you went back and got closer to that window, did you make any observations of damage to the window or the window screen?
No.
And were you able to close it and secure the window?
Eventually, yes.
Fair to say there was blood in that area that kind of was in the way?
Yes, and the bed was kind of pushed in front of it.
Okay. So did you have to move the bed in order to get to the window?
Yes, ma'am.
As far as anything removed from the home, did you go back into the basement at somebody's direction?
No, ma'am.
At some point, had you helped to remove some medical equipment that the fire department had left behind?
That was during the search warrant.
Okay. And is that the only items that you yourself removed from the home?
Correct.
As part of the follow-up investigation, did you work with Trooper McGilligan and some of the other troopers from the State Police Detective Unit to conduct follow-up interviews and gather more information?
Yes, ma'am.
Is it fair to say that the State Police were the primary investigators and they took over pretty much everything from that point on?
That's correct.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Raytheon.
I have no questions. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.